This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan. You've heard the song, A Rainy Night in Georgia. Well, it's a rainy day in Iowa. And last night, I do PA for our high school baseball team, and we got rained out. I'm the only thing not growing in this weather, I think. Now we're getting ready for the 4th of July, which means a trip, of course, to Slater, which makes Independence Day the biggest community celebration of the summer.
That's right, Paul. And Bob Krause, representative of the Slater Community Club, is here to talk over this.
How are you, Bob? I have all your material here right in front of me of the big celebration coming up. And one highlight that jumps out at me is the fact that you have queen candidates. Tell us about that.
Yes. As part of the effort to raise funds, we have a number of community groups that sponsor queens, and you can vote for your queen by purchasing raffle tickets, which then also allows you to enter into a drawing for prizes. It raises funds for the community club and places votes for your favorite queen, and we have princesses as well.
Wow. And whoever gets picked, there'll be no hard feelings. Is that right, Bob? Everyone's a friend.
That's correct. Yep. It's all for the fundraising and putting on a wonderful program tonight and tomorrow and Slater.
Well, we have a person who's been very active here at KHOI and worked with us considerably. And Howard Hammond was Mr. Slater, and I really miss Howard. He was wonderful, and I'm sure he used to be involved in the direct planning and execution of your 4th of July's in the past. We all miss Howard.
Yep. Howard was a great man. We miss him dearly. He was involved in most everything in Slater at some time or another. A very interesting man, fun to talk to. He had a lot of history. It was neat to know Howard.
And you have a carnival. I'm looking at Wednesday, July 3rd, the night before the 4th of July. You have the beer tent going on at Nelson Park.
Mm-hmm.
And a kiddie parade starting at 6 p.m. I love kiddie parades. You know that?
Oh, they're wonderful. I don't know if we'll have probably 500 kids in their bicycles all decorated up and moms and dads pulling kids in wagons with streamers and pinwheels. It's just a lot of fun to see. And then they come into Nelson Park for some snacks afterwards.
Well, this sounds like a Norman Rockwell painting to me.
And
you have a beer tent, too, at Nelson Park. And also you have the dulcimer guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mike Anderson. He plays the dulcimer, huh? Never heard of him before.
I believe this is his first trip to Slater for the 4th of July. We like to try different things and bring in new people, and there's always something going on stage. It's just a lot of fun. Hopefully it'll be a nice evening. No rain, about 80 degrees with a little breeze coming in out of the north.
Well, you know, that's what I hope for everybody for the 4th of July. And Friday night, really, will be topped off by fireworks at 10 p.m., and I know you have a very respectable fireworks display at Slater. I've heard about that from a lot of folks.
Yep, my understanding is we have the largest hand-fired fireworks display in the state. And that's, and I guess, an important distinction. A lot of them today are computer-driven, where you push a button and then it fires. And those are really neat. But Slater's are, everyone is hand-fired by our local fire department, and they do a tremendous job. We'll have, I don't know, there'll be 15,000, 20,000 people in and around town watching the fireworks show.
Wow. Well, it deserves that kind of turnout if it's one of the biggest in Iowa. That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
10 o'clock.
Yes. And if it should rain, not to jinx anything, the rain date is the evening of the 4th.
So you can
always
do it.
We'll get them shot off tonight.
That's good. You can do it the actual 4th of July, too. Then on Thursday, the actual July 4th date, it's a 5K run beginning at 6:15. I might sleep through that, but I hope you have a lot of people coming.
Yes. Well, and the Ballard Kiwanis Club has started this. I think this is our second or third year of the 5K run. And if you can't make that, that's okay. But show up between 8 and 10 for some pancakes.
Wow.
Some of those good Kiwanis pancakes before the parade starts at 10.
Hey, that's great. Now, the parade is at 10, and the Grand mm-hmm. Marshal this year is Fred Mason. Tell us about Fred.
Fred is an icon of Slater. He's a former fire chief for many years. He has Mason's Standard, which is also referred to as the Mason's House of Knowledge. There is a gathering of gentlemen there quite often that solve the world's problems. Fred is still active. He will service vehicles. He services, changes oil in my cars, does a great job. He's just, like I said, he's one of those icons of the community, kind of like Howard. He's been there forever.
Well, Fred deserves to be Parade Marshal. Fred Mason, Parade
yes.
Marshal this year. Now, there's a climbing wall, too, put on by the Iowa National Guard. I'm sure a lot of middle school and older kids will really enjoy that, too.
Yes, we've had that in years past, and thanks to the Iowa National Guard recruiting folks for bringing that up. It's for youngsters. I suppose it's about 20 foot tall, and they get strapped in with a safety harness, and then they can climb this wall. That's always been a popular item here in the past.
And for everybody, there's food and craft vendors at Nelson Park, and you have a carnival also, so you have rides for everybody, too.
Yep. You mentioned food and vendors. This is one of the neat things about the Slater 4th of July. We have the Boy Scouts are selling sweet corn. We have the Lutheran Church and American Legion selling pie. And then you can go over to the Methodist Church booth and buy ice cream. So it's a lot of local vendors. It's truly, as you mentioned earlier, I think it's a Rockwell painting in the way things are done. And it's just a fun, family-oriented day at the park.
And I see that you have actual formal opening ceremonies. I like that in a festival.
Yes.
Because it's a time for everyone to be there and everyone to get together and have a formal opening for the holiday. I really like that. That's actually noon on 4th of July.
Yes. Yep. I have to be careful of when the fire alarm sounds at noon to make sure that I don't get interrupted. But yes, we'll have the Legion. We'll start off with a presentation of our colors. Local pastor will say a prayer. As a group, we will all pledge allegiance and sing the national anthem. And then the mayor will welcome everyone to the city of Slater for our 4th of July celebration. It's a tradition that's gone on as long as I can remember.
And then shortly after that at 12:30, we have the Community Band and Chorus as a concert. That's going to be great, too, I'm sure.
They do a tremendous job. These are all local people. They get together on their own time. That's a fun thing to just sit and listen to. Both the band and the chorus do a tremendous job. I can't thank those people enough for the time they put in to do that. And it's a treat to just sit with your lawn chairs after the parade and listen to the chorus and the band play.
Hey, that's something someone my age can really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at this and I see all the things appealing to so many people of different ages. You have your high school and middle school kids busily climbing the climbing wall.
Yep.
While all us old folks sit on lawn chairs watching the community band and chorus.
Mm-hmm.
How can you miss that? Everybody at different age groups has something satisfying going on.
Well, again, it's a family-oriented day. We try and do our best to give something for everyone. And you can just sit and visit and watch people. Nelson Park is a wonderful old-age park. There are many, many big trees. Nelson Park is two square blocks, and I would say probably 80% of it is covered in shade.
Well, maybe in Story City they'll have Wearson Park for two mm-hmm. square feet. I'm not sure what will happen. Now, who is Nelson? Who's the park named after? I'm curious about that.
And And there is a plaque inside the log cabin at Nelson Park that talks about the gentleman, and I have read it before, but his history escapes me for right now. But when you stop down at our 4th of July, either this evening or tomorrow, look me up. I'll take you inside, and we'll read about it.
We'll read the plaque, and I will know who Mr. Nelson was. And we're proud of Mr. Nelson. You don't get parks named after you for nothing, right?
No.
He's got to be Mr. Wonderful. I'll tell you what, there's also a volleyball tournament. Now, do you get great participation for that? That starts at noon on the 4th.
Yes, we have a couple, and these are over at Grimm Park, which is over on, we have another park over on the west side of town, right next to the bike trail. We have a sand volleyball and horseshoes, both starting at noon over at Grimm Park. And we get a lot of participation for that as well.
That's a wonder of the horseshoe. I haven't thrown a horseshoe in years. I bet you have some semi-pros coming to that.
There's some good competition over at the horseshoe area, and that's also at Grimm Park, that's also where the city pool is at, and so you could cool off there at the pool.
And you have bingo, too, at the beer tent. Wow.
Yep.
Bingo, yep. I like bingo because you can win without skill, you know. I've always liked things you can win without skill. And then, at 2 p.m., a hypnotist, Ray Thompson, is coming.
Yep. Ray has been to the Slater 4th of July many, many times. He always does a great show. We just need more people to show up. We need those volunteers to get up on stage that would be interested in being hypnotized and performing for those of us out in the audience.
You know, it's always amazing to me when I've attended something like that how these people are so good at pulling people out of the audience. You know, if I were doing that show, I would be real worried about nobody coming up on the stage. But they always get people. It's amazing how they do that. And then at 3 p.m., it's Amy's School of Dance. That's going to be a lot of young ladies in tutus, right?
Well, and there will be some young boys there as well. But yeah, Amy's School of Dance out of Huxley. They will come over and put on a one-hour show. It's amazing to me how these young kids, what all they've learned to do. They just do a tremendous job, and the stage is filled with smiles. So if you need a little uplifting time, that's a good show to come and watch.
Well, I've spent a lot of time emceeing the Bill Riley show at Scandinavian Days in Story City, and there's always a lot of dancers, and I'm always amazed at what they can do. And there are really a lot of very competent dance teachers in Iowa. Mm-hmm. I'm a witness to that because a lot of our contestants are dancers, and I'm always impressed by their professionalism and what they can do. And really at very tender ages, too. It's amazing.
Yes, it is.
Now, Slater's Got Talent. That's coming up at 4. Now, tell me about Slater's Got Talent. I'm sure it does, but...
Yes, that's a show where people sign up from all ages. We have performers, I think the youngest has maybe been 3 years old, up to an individual in his 70s. Any more, it's either a dance routine or a vocalist, typically. And they oftentimes have music on a CD or a thumb drive or an MP3 player. And we play the music, and they will sing and dance. We typically have it broken out into 3 age groups, and then we will have winners, and they will receive a cash prize. That's a lot of fun show. Again, these young kids, it's really invigorating to watch them and their excitement to get up on stage and perform, and they do a tremendous job.
Well, now, here's the climax. At 6 p.m. on the 4th is the crowning of the Queen.
Yes.
And you mentioned that each candidate is sponsored by a community organization. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
That is correct, yep. And they're all listed in the program. There's about 9 of them, I believe. 9 candidates. You can buy those raffle tickets. Those will be counted than before. I think the cutoff is probably around 5 o'clock for sales. They will count the votes, and then we will name the queen. I am the MC of the events up on stage, and I do have to put in a plug. One time, I kissed the queen after she won.
Oh, no.
It was my daughter.
Oh, okay. That you held me in suspense there. That could be controversial in Slater, Iowa. Oh, no, we can't.
No, I felt that was all right. So, well, but that's been a number of years ago. But, again, the girls, they're dressed to the nines. They look fantastic. They're all up on stage. A little bit is talked about each one and the little princesses. And then we crown the queen. Very exciting event. And then we do the raffle drawing, and the queen and the princess help with that part of the final ceremonies.
Well, you know, I have a copy of the Tri-County Times in my hand, and the queen candidates look great, and I'm sure they all are people who've achieved and done such wonderful things in their young lives. And I noticed that actually 6 of the 9 included in this group have really said that some aspect of the Slater 4th of July celebration were their happiest moments growing up in Slater. Now, isn't that great? Now, a lot of the girls there will dream of being queen, and maybe next year we could have a king, too. I was actually kicked out of a king contest for failing the swimsuit competition. But, you know, this is fantastic. The queens are the candidates, and everyone raffle ticketing to vote for them, and that's just a great thing that everyone can participate. And what I really like, as I said before, is all the number of activities you have that reflect the interests of all age groups. I think you've covered everything that anybody would like to do at a town festival. And Susan and I have done a lot of highlighting of town festivals throughout the summer. And this is really one of the best, I'm sure. And you're going to have Bernie Sanders in the parade?
Yes, we are excited. What an honor to have a presidential candidate come to Slater, Iowa, take the time to walk through our parade. I think that's really special.
Well, I do too, and I think that he's planning to try and make the parade in Slater and rock it up to Ames and be in the Ames parade too.
Yes.
So he's definitely covering Central Iowa on the 4th of July, that's for sure.
Yes, he is.
Well, now, Bob, I just think this is going to be a great festival, and I'm thankful that someone like you, who is very competent and articulate about describing it, was here to promote it here on KHOI today, and I think you're going to have a great time. I would advise anybody who wants to do the 4th of July celebration, starting on the 3rd of July, actually, to be in Slater for both the 3rd and the 4th. This is going to be wonderful. Bob Krause from Slater. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to promote our local event. Hope to see everyone there.
Enjoy, enjoy.
Before we leave the fireworks for the 4th of July, I'd like to mention this interesting situation where they have a July 3rd fireworks, and then if it rains, which looks like it's quite likely to do, then they set them off on the 4th. In Ames, we have also have our fireworks on the 3rd, officially. But if it rains, they are not on the 4th. They are on the 5th. And the reason for that difference, he explained that they're hand-set off by the fire department in Slater. But in Ames, we bring in a commercial better deal on our fireworks, so we can have a much better fireworks display if we have it on the 3rd than on the 4th. So our rain date is the 5th. It was quite interesting to me that Slater and Ames had this had the same idea for different reasons.
Yeah.
Have it on the 3rd. And so I suppose if it's a nice night and you are eager for fireworks, you have big choices. And if you're from other towns, you can...
You have to look it up in the paper. I'm sure the Tribune will cover all the communities. And now we have a little John Philip Sousa here.
Yes.
Stars and Stripes Forever.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, and we just heard from Bob Krauss telling us about the over-the-top July 4th celebration in Slater. But we're expecting some pretty exciting things here in Ames tomorrow. Slater has Bernie Sanders marching in his parade. Can we top that? Bernie will rush over from Slater in time to march at the end of the Ames parade. But we have something more significant that goes beyond any single candidate. Lucas Bliley is here with us to tell us about something that the Ames Climate Action Team has planned. Some of our listeners may remember Lucas as a leader of the organization at Ames High School that presented a petition to the Ames City Council with over 600 signatures from Ames High students on it. What was that, Lucas?
So that was a petition that was asking the City Council and the School Board of Ames to come up with a climate action plan. We didn't tell them what should specifically be in that plan, but we basically were asking them to have some kind of plan in response to the climate crisis.
Well, I think one of the things that was impressive to actually also to the other people involved in climate action, the older generations involved in climate action, was the number of students you had involved. And then later, you led the student strike at Ames High. Right?
I co-led the student strike.
You co-led the student strike. You were one of the leaders. And the reason I mentioned that is because that student strike was inspired by a Swedish high school student, Greta Thunberg, who coined the phrase, and I think it has become actually a platform phrase for one of the candidates for this year's Democratic primary. Could you play the Jay Inslee quote? This was from his debate.
We are the first generation to feel the sting of climate change, and we are the last that can do something about it. Our towns are burning, our fields are flooding, Miami is inundated. And we have to understand this is a climate crisis, an emergency. And it is our last chance in the administration, next one, to do something about it. But the most important thing on this, and the biggest decision for the American public is, who's going to make this the first priority? And I am the candidate and the only one who's saying this has to be the top priority of the United States, the organizing principle to mobilize the United States so that we can do what we've always done. Lead the world and invent the future and put 8 million people to work.
Well, actually, of course, Greta didn't have the vision for the American future. I guess you believe that's true, don't you, Lucas?
Yeah, I definitely believe that's true. I think young people are showing up and making it happen. I think about all the school strikes across the world, and I think about the Extinction Rebellion protests, and I think about like the Sunrise Movement, how they're pushing for the Green New Deal here in the USA. And that's primarily been millennials and younger. And so it's really cool to see how much of an impact they've been able to have in even just the last year.
Yes, and you mentioned and younger. These new generations, there was the Generation X. Well, what are they?
I think we're technically Generation Z.
Christians. Okay, well.
That means you're the last generation. Oh, no.
I guess they start over at the beginning of the alphabet.
We better start over with A.
A1.
I won't be around, but we need to go back to A.
Generation Z, are these voting age yet?
I'm voting age. So I think the oldest of the Generation Z is voting age, but I don't really know where they draw the lines in terms of that.
Was it a surprise to you that Bernie Sanders was going to be here at the parade?
A little bit. I thought it was interesting because I'm assuming that cities all over the country are having 4th of July parades. And I know we're in Iowa, but, you know, that he picked ours out of all the ones going on today is pretty interesting.
Well, of course, your part of the parade is not political in the sense of supporting a candidate. It just happens that he's here. We've had a couple of candidates come through and answer questions about climate change, and maybe we can play those a little bit later. But I think we'd like to know what you and the Ames Climate Action Team have planned for the parade.
So the Ames Climate Action Team, which is, I'll describe the Ames Climate Action Team a little bit first. It's a group of community members. We represent a lot of different churches. We have representatives from the college, from the high school, from a lot of different places, and we come together every month to discuss what kinds of tangible things we can do, primarily locally, to affect the climate crisis. And what we sort of talked about at our last meeting was we should be in the parade. And we've seen all these different models, whether it be like the school strikes or Extinction Rebellion, or all these people, what they do is they're out in the streets and they're marching with their signs, and that's been able to draw a lot of attention. So we said, hey, we need to be part of that in Ames. And so we are going to have a spot in the parade, and we are actually modeling how we're doing this after what happened in 1970 at a Visha parade, which was after that parade there was a group of people who were upset about the Vietnam War. Maybe upset's not a strong enough word. And so they joined the end of the parade, and they asked people to join them as they went. And by the time they had gotten through the whole route, it was this huge group of hundreds and hundreds of people. And so we're going to do something similar. We're going to start out with a core group, and we're going to ask people to join as we go. And, you know, I think we're in a cultural time and place where people will be motivated enough to join. I'd hope we'd swell to maybe 100, but I really don't have a prediction for how well it's going to go. And I think if we have 30 people, it's a success. If we have 300 people, it's even more of a success. But, you know, the fact that we're there at all making our voices heard about the climate crisis is I think, important.
So, Lucas, in the group, you're going to have marching. You'll have 20 to 30 that's going to be in the parade, right?
At least the core group.
Now, what device are you going to use to entice people or invite them to join you?
We've got a number of signs that say join us.
Okay.
And I think the best way, and we'll talk about this, I think, to the core group that's starting out on the day of, is if you see somebody you know, go up and ask them, like, hey, like, would you mind joining us?
Yeah.
And I think that, based on how many people we personally know, that can start the ball moving. And I think there's definitely some people who have heard about it and are not going to start in our core group. And they might just be, you know, coming out of the audience of the parade, and people will see that and be like, maybe I should do that too. And so we'll hopefully have a good amount of people joining us.
I know that you've got a lot of sign makers. I've been hearing about that. I know that they're making them, and I think they're going to be carrying a banner, right?
Yeah, we have a banner that it actually says like Elders for Climate Change. The UU had a banner created to do one of their events. So we do have some, I guess, elders walking with us, who I think will be the ones.
Well, actually, I maybe shouldn't say this because he might not be able to make it, but Irv Klaas said he was going to walk with his walker.
Yeah.
And in the Vichy parade in 1970, there were lots of strollers.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd like to have strollers as well as walkers.
Yeah. No, and I think it's important to actually touch on that a moment. Like, if Irv Klaas, who's definitely a little bit older and has a little bit of trouble walking, is willing to walk the whole route of the parade on a hot day to stand up for this, because I think for him it's really personal with his grandchildren. He wants them to see a good future. Like, honestly, there's no excuse for nobody else to join us, right? Like, it's a easy way to plug into this global movement. I think if you're stressed out about climate change and you don't know what how you're going to play a role, like, just do this. This is an easy first step. You'll meet other people who are fighting the same battle, and maybe you can go from there. But not joining us is, when you see the scale of the climate crisis, not joining us, I think that'll just push the people who don't join us into, like, more despair, because you're not joining the movement that is going on right here.
Well, there's another kind of movement that I know that some of the signs that we'll be carrying are the SunSmart Ames yard signs. And the issue there is there is something that people can do right here in Ames. We are trying to get money for our solar farm, and we're falling short. We need 80%, and we have 65% right now. And this is going to come up for a vote before the city council at the end of this month, whether we build it or not. And so anybody who's hanging back on that and thinks, oh, well, it's not enough financial advantage for me, might think about that that's something very concrete that people can do.
Well, now, let's say someone hears this broadcast, wants to join you for the parade. They need to report to Staging Area 8.
Yep.
How do we find that, Lucas?
So, I mean, if you go to Wheatsfield, you should be able to see us.
Okay.
That's what I would recommend, is go to Wheatsfield and you should be able to see us.
Because if someone says, hold, I'm going to join that, they need to know where to go at the parade beginning.
So. Yeah. What I would say is, so if you really want to be part of our core group, go to Wheatsfield. You'll see our big sign. I've got a huge one that's just the earth, so you'll be able to see it. And then if that's like you don't want to do that, just join us when you see us walking. You don't even have to come to the beginning.
Well, you're an impressive guy. You've been so active at the high school level and so much of an advocate for this that you're an inspiration to me. And he brought a water bottle with a permanent straw that will never end up in the Pacific Ocean. I like that. You walk the walk and talk the talk.
Thank you.
Fantastic, Lucas. And that's going to be the parade on 4th of July here in Ames. Report to Staging Area 8. And Lucas will be the guy with the reversible hat waving at you, saying, join us in this wonderful cause.
And we also have a couple of the presidential candidates who've come to Ames and answered questions about climate change. Last night, Beto O'Rourke was here, and this is what we got from him.
Hello, my name is Kate, and thank you for mentioning that we're having really bad rain today. The Midwest and a lot of the United States has been affected by flooding and just really horrible climate sort of emergencies. What kind of plans or thoughts do you have about the ways that climate change really threatens farmers and rural America specifically?
I've learned from listening to farmers here in Iowa that we are seeing, I think, the wettest 12-month period in recent history, or maybe in history in Iowa. Those here will know the answer to that question. We've seen the windows close on farmers whose fields are too wet to be able to plant. We're seeing the ability to pass that farm on to the next generation, to your daughter or to your son, compromised, because you're seeing historic low farm incomes, farmers who are underwater in debt, and now farmers whose entire fields are lakes. We saw that in the southwest part of the state outside of Pacific Junction, soybean farm. And I remember passing the bins that had burst because the stored soybeans had soaked up all of the water and burst the sides of the bin. And just the smell was overpowering. And that was a smell in some ways of defeat. I just imagined all of the hours of labor that went into planting and to working those fields. And all of that is now lost. Lost because of the flooding, but also lost because that grain was stored, because it wasn't in China, because that market was closed down to those farmers, because we started a trade war and tariffs that ensured that they weren't going to be able to make the profit necessary to keep that farm going. So of all of those issues, the most existential for those farmers, for our country, and for this planet is climate change. The Missouri spilling its banks, the highest level of runoff in the history of that river. We know that that's not an anomaly. We know that the warming of this planet caused by you and me, our emissions, and then our inaction collectively in the face of the facts, that has caused those storms and that runoff and that flooding, the fires in California, the droughts in other parts of the world. How do we combat this? We free ourselves from a dependence on fossil fuels. We fully embrace renewable energy technology. We invest in the next generation of wind and solar and battery storage technology that allows us to distribute that stored energy at will onto the grid. We put farmers in the driver's seat. We ensure that they can plant cover crops at a profit to pull more carbon out of the air and sequester more of it in the soil. Regenerative grazing and agriculture being pioneered right here in Iowa. Let's pay those farmers and ranchers for the environmental services that they are providing. And then let's make sure that communities like Pacific Junction, which are on the front lines of climate change, that we make an investment in them to make sure that they are safe when the next storm comes, because we know that they're going to continue to be hit by climate change going forward. If all of us do all that we can, then the United States can take a global leadership role in convening other countries to do their part, and then there's a chance that we keep this planet from warming another 2 degrees Celsius. Our plan calls for net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 and getting halfway there by 2030, which is just a little more than 10 years from now. It is an historic investment on the part of everybody, but I know that we can do it. This is the challenge of this generation, and I'm confident that we are up to it. Thanks for asking the question.
Lucas, do you have any comment on that or any suggestions that he didn't make?
Well, first I'll say that I'm really happy to hear that climate change's effect on the Midwest and agriculture specifically is being brought up, either through questions like that or in the debates. It was actually mentioned several times. The one thing I would add to that, though, is beyond just like increasing like the resiliency of these farms in the Midwest or preventing climate change from having this effect, how can we incentivize farming so they're actually storing carbon in the soil, either in the form of organic matter or deeper down? That could be a really powerful mechanism in which we actually really improve the lives of farmers, because in the future, I think a carbon tax will be something that exists. Could we reward farmers for doing negative carbon farming? And that's a question I'm hoping to pose one of these days to one of the candidates and see what they have to say about that.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming in. Would you like to repeat the information you have about how to find the parade?
Sure. So tomorrow, Ames Climate Action Team is walking the parade, and we will be near Wheatsfield. If you want to find us, I recommend just joining us when you see us in the parade. But if you really want to be part of that core group at the beginning, go to Wheatsfield, look for signs about climate change. There should be a big sign that has the Earth on it. You can't miss us, and we'll start from there.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Paul Wilson and I are your hosts for today, and we've been talking about the 4th of July events, including plans for a climate march as part of the Ames Parade. I think it's time to wrap up our show with something about the natural world. But this one is a follow-up to last Friday's alarming story about leaping worms. Our story simply said, if you see a leaping worm, kill it. But I think we need to understand a little more about how they spread and what we can do to prevent them getting into our gardens and fields. So I brought Donald Lewis, ISU Extension entomologist, to give us a little practical information for preventing the spread of these dangerous creatures. While we bring him into the studio, we have a little music break about another insect.
Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Lead us less too far, we wander. Love's sweet voices calling yonder. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Hey there, don't get dimmer, dimmer. Light the path below above and lead us on to love. Glow, little glowworm,
a fly, a fire glow like an incandescent wire glow for the female of the species. Turn on the AC and the DC. This night could use a little brightening. Light up, you little old bug of lightning. When you gotta glow, you gotta glow. Glow, little glowworm, glow. Glow, little glowworm, glow and glimmer. Swim through the sea of night, little swimmer. Now
okay. Well, I was going to ask you, Don, about fireflies, but last week's phenology with Paul Schlarbaum was such a beautiful description of the lives and the gradual, not extinction yet, but threats to fireflies. I had thought that it was just the pesticides, and I thought that the fact that I saw fewer mosquitoes at the same time that I saw fewer fireflies was related. But you say that's not right.
Probably not. When we look at these interactions in ecology, there's a whole lot of things going on. For example, mosquito populations are usually determined by standing water, where the mosquito larvae can breed and reproduce and grow. And that may be some distance from where we experience the mosquitoes, and so it's not always an easy direct correlation. But as we look at other insects that are declining, everything from fireflies to bees of all kinds, habitat destruction, habitat loss may be one of our biggest issues, that you stand around and look in Iowa for a place for a bee to find a flower to feed on, and they may have to go a long distance. So loss of habitat may be one of our biggest issues as we talk about these declines in insect populations.
But it doesn't matter to the mosquitoes, right?
Well, the mosquitoes will go where their food is. And with with hundreds of species of mosquitoes in the world and at least 50 different species of mosquitoes in Iowa, there's something for everybody. There are mosquitoes that prefer to feed on birds, and there are mosquitoes that will feed on us if they find us, but they'll feed on other animals when we're not there. So these things are fairly complex, and as we look for simple explanations, we are usually wrong.
So, but I am right that I might have seen fewer mosquitoes in my backyard because there's something like fogging. I heard a little about the fogging. Where is that?
Well, the mosquito population goes up and down depending on rainfall, and we need a long period of standing water for the mosquitoes to reproduce. So back in May, when it was raining heavily, we had fewer mosquitoes because the water was not standing. The water was being recharged, changed, because of frequent rainfall. Then we had a period of less rain, and the mosquito population blossomed, but now it has declined again. And we think we can relate that to the precipitation changes that we had over that time. But municipalities and cities and areas get to choose the difficult decision of to fog for mosquitoes or not. And there are people who will say, no, we should not use pesticides because of what other unintended consequences may happen. There are other people who say the risk of West Nile virus is so great that we must control mosquitoes. And there are the politicians in the middle. And the city of Ames has come down on the side of fogging parks and some other areas upon request, but not doing citywide fogging. But every municipality gets to go through this active discussion of what's the right amount of fogging, what's the right amount of risk reduction of other consequences, and it's not an easy decision.
Well, it seems like politics really gets into everything, doesn't it?
And politics is local. As you talk to various towns around the state, some choose to fog all the streets, all the residential areas, and some choose to have a limited fogging, and some choose to have none. And it's a local decision.
So it's local control.
Again.
But the reason that I originally called you in was because I saw this long article in the Ames Tribune about jumping worms, and I saw that you were quoted prominently in that. But it seemed to me, from reading it carefully, a little more than just the top level, that There are things that we can do to recognize where these come from and to prevent their spreading.
Jumping worm is a great name for this little earthworm that has this violent reaction to being disturbed. Normally, you pick up an earthworm and it kind of lays there, or they scurry back down underground if they're disturbed. But these earthworms wiggle violently to the point that it looks like they're trying to jump out of the container that they're in.
I think there's a practical solution for that. I have backyard chickens, and I don't mean to say everybody should get chickens to clear this problem, but they would be very happy to see something moving like a worm. I mean, it's just, you know, do the birds attack these worms more is what, you know.
If they can find them. In the case of the jumping worm, it is a surface dweller. It's not a deep in the ground worm like the night crawler. It's not in the top layer of soil like the common garden worms. It's more like the compost worms that live under the leaf litter.
So it's like the red worm.
More like the red worm, except it's another invasive species. It's been in the United States for a period of time, but it was in the eastern United States not generating much attention. And then when the jumping worm was established in Wisconsin, it became much more of an ecological threat, and we started paying more attention to it. But it's another invasive species that on its own wouldn't move very far. But when we move plant material, soil, and mulch, we have the opportunity to distribute this jumping worm. But they are an ecological threat in the areas where they build up large populations.
And so I guess most people don't bring in mulch. When you bring in plants, maybe transplant something that has jumping worms in it?
It could be. They could be in potting soil. They could be in with the plant materials, and this appears to have occurred at least some of the time. Mulch, wood chips do get moved, the shredded bark that we use. But the jumping worm is a threat because of two major issues. One is it reproduces very, very quickly at very high numbers, and it outcompetes the other earthworms that are already there. So the earthworms that we think of as present and beneficial, the night crawlers that are aerating the soil, the garden worms that are mixing in organic matter into the top layer of soil, we think of those as beneficial. But because this other jumping worm reproduces so quickly, it outcompetes them and drives their numbers down, so we get less of that benefit. The second thing that happens is the jumping worm is a voracious eater that will eliminate the surface layer of organic matter, the leaf litter, the mulch that's on top of the ground. And in sloped woodlands of Wisconsin, where this is most being studied, the removal of that surface layer increases compaction, and it increases erosion. So those are the ecological effects of this new species.
Well, I was told as a child that if you cut a worm in two, that you had two worms. It didn't kill it. Is that right?
Not with all worms. There are some.
About jumping worms?
But in the case of the jumping worms, no. And in the case of our earthworms, no, that's not going to happen. So, but there are some other flatworms where that may occur. But in the case of earthworms, no, they have a head end and a tail end, and they need one of each.
Okay. Well, so when they say kill it, then you could kill it by just dividing it, stepping on it.
But first you have to catch them, and because they're living under that surface duff layer, that may be a challenge. And because they are active, it's going to be hard to pick them up. But right now there are no controls for earthworms. We have eliminated all of the chemicals that we used to use that would kill earthworms, and for good reason we took those off the market. But this is one that's going to be a significant challenge.
Answers.
That's a very, Don, thank you very much. That's very interesting. I want to be counted among the people that need both my top end and my rear end.
We'll keep them both.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wilson and I, Susan Branson, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Bob Krause, Lucas Bliley, Betta O'Rourke, and Donald Lewis.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on KHOI at 89.1 FM. on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Friday at 5 o'clock on Fridays. You can listen to today's local talk show, any of our past local talk shows also, online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. And now stay tuned for Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9.
Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Stars and Stripes Forever by John Philip Sousa from the CD, The President's Own Marine Band. The Glowworm from the Mills Brothers' 1952 recording of The Glowworm.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, and if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878, or you can contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know. Contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
Greetings. This is Ursula Rudenberg, KHOI's station manager. KHOI is hiring a full-time operations manager. This is a job working with people and equipment and requires technical, managerial, and social skills. It's a 40 hours per week full-time paid position. You must have the ability to work effectively with many types of creative people and have good communication skills with the ability to work on a team as well as to think independently and solve technical and broadcast problems. KHOI is an equal opportunity employer and does not discriminate. To get a full job description or to apply, contact myself, the station manager, on my cell phone at 510-812-7989. That's 510-812-7989. Or email khoiradio@gmail.com. That's khoiradio@gmail.com.